All right, Rabotai, just one word on the parasha. We're learning parashat Terumah. The stories are over, but not too much narrative in these texts. These are hard parashiyot for darshanim, of course, because you're reading now a blueprint. The blueprint of the Mishkan. A lot of pieces of furniture, a lot of dimensions, a lot of detail work and technicalities. And these parashiyot are written over and over again. We have Terumah, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudeh. I mean, must be it's important if the Torah gave it so much real estate for parashiyot in the Torah to really basically repeat the same thing over and over again. So that tells us the value of it. So in our parasha, we'll talk about today one of the pieces of furniture, the Aron, the Ark. So the pasuk begins when it says, "Ve'asu et ha'aron." Ve'asu et ha'aron. Plural. All the other pieces of furniture says "Ve'asita." In a singular term. It comes to the Aron is written in plural. And the explanation is because the Aron represents Torah. And when it comes to Torah, everybody must have a chelek in Torah. Nobody's able to say, well, Torah, that's for the rabbis. You know? That's for the scholars, that's for the yeshiva guys, that's for the kollel guys. I'm a businessman. So the pasuk says, no, va'asu et ha'aron. That the aron has to be a group effort. Everybody has to have a chelek in the aron. You might not have to have a chelek in the shulchan. You might not have to have a chelek in the menorah. You might not have to have a chelek in the mizbeah. But when it comes to the Torah itself, va'asu aron, you have to be part of it. Whether you're a rich man, whether you're a poor man, doesn't matter. So the Torah comes and tells us that the Aron was built in an interesting way. Pasuk writes that they placed rings on the side of the Aron. V'yatzaktalo arbat tabeot zahav, golden rings. Interesting. Tabi'ot zahav. A person gets married, he gets married with a tabi'at zahav. The name is over here that our first marriage is to the Torah. Re'u hayim imisha asher ahavta, zu Torah. So therefore, b'tabi'ot zahav, you have to put tabi'ot zahav areat mikudeshet li, as if Klai Yisrael is getting married to the Torah. That's the Torah itself. Eshet Chayil is referring to the Torah. Chayil is 48. It's the 48 kinyanim of the Torah that we learned in the summer. So there's a remez to the connection that Am Yisrael has to have with their spiritual spouse. V'yatzaktulo arbat tabeot zahav. Four tabaot, you know, an engagement ring, a wedding ring, a first year anniversary ring. And all the rings of the Torah. Could be the four rings keneged pardesa Torah. One keneged pshat, and the kodesh yadi b'pshat, and the kodesh yadi remez, and the kodesh yadi b'drash, and the kodesh yadi b'sod. V'yatzakto arbat tabeot zahav. Fine. And then the pasuk says, v'asita badeh ase shittim, that you have to make badeh ase shittim. What is that? The poles. Made out of asir shittim. What is asir shittim? Acacia wood. What's acacia wood? It's a type of cedar. No, what is acacia wood? V'tzipita otam zahav, and you have to, you know, put them, put gold plated. V'hebeta tabadim b'tabaot. Place the badim in the tabaot. Al salot aron. Laset et ha'aron bahem. Also, the Torah clearly tells us that the purpose of the Badim is to carry the Aron. Functional. It's not decorative. It's functional. How are you going to carry the Aron? You need to have a grip. So they put two poles on the side of it. And you get the pole bearers. One the front, one the back. And they lift it up, heave-ho, and then they carry the Aron. Ah! You know everything. B'tabeot ha'aron yu abadim. And the pasuk comes along and says, B'tabeot ha'aron yu abadim. Place the tabaot, place the badim in the tabaot. Lo yasuru memenu. Interesting. They cannot leave. They cannot be taken out. Why can't you remove them? Why can't you remove them? If the whole purpose is functional, so once you place the Aron in the Kodesh Kodashim, so you should have a storage, a locker room. Take out the Badim, put them in the locker room. And when you need to move it again, put them back in. But there's a lav over here. I'm not too sure what the logic of this lab is. Lo yasuru b'menu. Why wouldn't I be able to take the badim out? I mean, other kelim in the Beit HaMikdash have badim. Mizbeach has badim. Shulchan has badim. No problem. You can take it out. Aron. Yasuru b'menu. Unless it's to answer Benny's question. Unless it's to answer Benny's question. You know, they lit the menorah every night in the Beit HaMikdash. Close to sunset, they would light the menorah and it would last the whole night until the morning. And the Hakamim come along and say that they didn't need to light a menorah in the Beit HaMikdash for light purposes. They didn't need it for light purposes. God is Orosh El Olam. When the Jewish people were in the desert, you had the Anan Esh following them the whole night. So God needs a chandelier in the Beit HaMikdash if you're lighting it for light. So the Mefarshim say, that's why every morning when they came to the Beit HaMikdash, the Ner HaMa'arvi was still lit. What's the reason for such a miracle? Such a miracle shows you that just like now, why is it lit? Obviously it's not for light. So too, last night when it was lit, it's also not for light. Understand when it's Megaleh? Nobody's going to say, oh, it's good the Ner Ma'arvi still lit because you know, it's dark here. It's a day. But I'm saying, you see clearly that it's not for the light. Because if it was for the light, once the day comes, it should go out. Ela must be, there's other reasons why the menorah is lit. So therefore, the day is Megaleh, what the night was for. Understand? If it was just for illuminating purposes, so God should make it in the morning, the second the sun rises, then it goes out. No, it's still lit. Why should it be still lit? Ela must be, it's not for light. Understand what it's Megaleh? So there was a menorah lit in the day. So we could say the same thing over here. If the whole purpose was to carry the Aron, so then already, when the Aron is in place, take it out. From the fact that you see we didn't take it out, even when the Aron was in place, that must be that's not the real reason. So that's Megaleh on the... Why? Because the Aron carries itself. So since the Aron carries itself, so you see that the Aron, that those poles were not needed really. The proof of the pudding is Because even when it was in place, you didn't have to take them out. So how can you say it's for carrying purpose? But no one's carrying it now. Eli, you're right. The Aron carries itself. So now we have to go back to the question. So why put poles at all? If the Aron carries itself, so you don't need poles. Just say, let the Aron, like a helicopter. Hold on to the Aron, say, okay, take off, and then it'll go up, like a drone. Like a drone, the Avdil. Yeah, push the thing, go. Take off. Hold on to the Aron. So then, go back to the question, why do you need these poles there? And why then are you never allowed to take them out? So there's different opinions on that. The Sefer Chinuch has an opinion on that. He says, according to the simple interpretation, he said, listen, you got to go according to Derech HaTeva. The Aron carried itself, but you cannot rely on that, a miracle. You have to do what you're supposed to do. And they didn't want the poles to be taken in and taken out, because in the rush, when God said, okay, Rabotai, we got to move, they might rush and they're not going to put the poles in good and Aron will fall. So therefore, out of kavod to the Aron, the Sefer Chinuch says, keep the poles in there. We don't want to make any mistakes with this Aron. It's worthy to keep the poles over there because in the haste, the guy's running to go, he left the trunk open. All the stuff fell out of the trunk. So what happened to you? All your luggage is on the highway. I was rushing. I forgot to shut the trunk. Or he left his front door open. He was running out. The guy in Elberon station. I was on the train once, and we're already in Little Silver or Red Bank, wherever we were. And the conductor says, Rabotai, somebody forgot their keys in the car running in Elberon. He was sitting in his car waiting for the train. The train came, and he got so nervous, he ran out of the car, he jumped on the train. The key's in the car, everything's on. So somebody called and said, hey, there's a car, there's nobody here. They're waiting an hour, 2 hours. All of a sudden, they made an announcement, Rabotai, come back. So you see the guy in the train, oh my gosh, I got so caught up in the catching the train. Your mind's on the train, you forget to leave the keys in the car. In Brooklyn, they wouldn't have that problem. It would be stolen in 1.5 seconds. It would be on a boat already to Russia, the car. But in deal, you have at least an hour to make that mistake.
That's a reference.
So you have an hour to make that mistake. So he was able to get his car back. But the point is, in the rush, you make mistakes. It's, oh, but that Hashem wants us to go, okay, get the Aron, you get the poles, put them in. In the haste, you might put the poles in wrong. So the Aron falls. So what happens is, out of kavod to the Aron, don't take them out. Leave the poles in, so it's always fastened tight, so nobody else for sure can make them. Simple, clean interpretation. Others have a different interpretation of the Badim. They say simple also, without getting into esoteric stuff. You didn't need to take the poles out. By the Mizbeach, you use the Mizbeach every day. So the Mizbeach has these poles, the Kohen's going to have a hard time, maneuvering around the poles. It becomes, cumbersome, bulky. You understand? The Shulchan he uses every day. So if you have these poles coming out of the Shulchan, it becomes difficult to maneuver. But the Aron, the Kohen went in there once a year. So once a year, you don't need to maneuver around the poles. So just from a, what do you call it, from a practical, what do you have to take out the poles for? You don't have to take them out for. It's not going to cause anybody any inconvenience on a daily basis. So leave the poles in there for. What do you have to take them out for? We're not getting into, I know you guys came for Kavanot and all this type of stuff. So when we say something practical, you nod your head. Hey, okay, that's the reason. But what, there's nothing wrong with being practical. There's nothing wrong with a practical reason to the Lord. Makes sense. Sometimes the best answer is the answer that makes practical sense. The simple pshat. The guy came to the rabbi and he said, Rabbi, I always notice on the Shabbat, Erev Shabbat, after you come out of the mikveh and you take a shower, you cut your nails. Could you explain to me why? He said, oh, you have to fast for 3 days. Fast for 3 days, and maybe you'll understand the answers. Wow, I can't believe I asked such a good question. I thought he was going to give me an easy answer. 3 days, he fasts, he comes back, he's starving, the guy can't eat. He says, what are you here? I fasted for 3 days for the answer. How come? He says, because when I come out of the shower, the nails are soft. He says, that's the answer? That's the answer. He says, so what did you tell me to fast for 3 days for? He says, because you're a tipesh. What are you asking a stupid question like that for? It's a tikkun for asking a dumb question. You have to fast for 3 days. Not everything is... He's waiting to... Oh, because after the mikveh, the kilipot, and then this. And leave all that stuff. They're soft. When you come out of the shower, you cut in them. It's very simple. You understand? I don't always have to go to the imaginary stuff. It's a practical reason. Well, practical is always the best answer. So we gave 3 or 4 answers already, what the purpose of the bedim. Now once you say that, then there's no reason to take them out. B'tabeot Aaron yu ha-bedim lo yasur memenu. Rav Samson, Rafael Hirsch has a novel interpretation on the Badim. Why the Badim can never be taken out. I'll explain it. I'll explain it according to a Be'er Yosef in Megillat Esther. So what happens? The Jewish people go to the party, and then all of a sudden Haman makes a Gezerah. Ma'ir Shushan Navocha. Mordechai rips his garments and he goes into the king's hatzer, the courtyard, Zag, Zaka, Gedola, making all noise. So Esther sees what's going on, so she sends Hatach to go talk to Mordechai. Ladat, Mazze Be'al Mazze. What's going on over here? Mazze Be'al Mazze. So the Gemara says in Megillah, this language, mazeh ba'al mazeh, Esther was alluding to a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says, v'amichtav, the writing on the luchot, ketuvim, mizeh u'mizeh hem ketuvim. That the Torah on the luchot was written, mizeh u'mizeh. It was written through and throughout. So she was saying to Mordechai, maybe they transgressed the Torah that was written Mizeh Mizeh Ketuvim. That was a way of asking Mordechai, maybe they're in contempt of the Torah. And which Torah? The Torah that was written Mizeh Mizeh Ketuvim. Ask the rabbi called Rabbi Yosef Salant. That's a very, very poetic way of saying maybe they transgressed the Torah. What do we care how the Torah was written? Mizeh Mizeh. Why does that make a difference? Just say Shema Avru al Torah. No, Shema Avru al Torah, Sheketuvah Mizeh Mizeh. What's that got to do with anything? What do I care how the Torah was written or chiseled into the stone? Understand this question? Why is she referring to the Torah at that moment? The Torah that's written Mizeh Mizeh Ketuvim. So he says like this. The Jewish people were invited to the party of Ahasuerus. And Mordechai, the great rabbi, came along and said, you know, we shouldn't go. It's not for us, this party. It's not for us. The people went anyway. What could have been the motivation of the people to go to this party against Mordechai's better judgment? The people had a faulty understanding. Their understanding was that it's true that the Torah says that you can't sit with the goyim, and you can't, you know, socialize with them and eat from their bread. Even the rabbis made a gezerah, drink from their wine. We know all that stuff, but it doesn't apply in every single generation, such laws. In the generation that we're in now, we have to adapt. We have to, you know, go with the times. Mordechai, you're old-fashioned. You're too rigid. The Torah has to evolve. You know, at certain times, certain things are practiced. And as society moves on to different nature, the Torah has to move on to that new phenomenon as well. And therefore, we need to go to the party over there to be close to the king. And if all these laws that I wrote, it's not for this time. And Mordechai was an old-fashioned rabbi saying, well, Torah doesn't change. What do you mean? In our Torah, we don't have a parenthesis that says, you know, unless you get invited to Ahasuerus' palace, it's Asur. And they were coming along and saying, no, you gotta go with the times. Your grandfather, he dressed like that. Yeah, you don't have to wear sissit anymore. In Europe, there was a siyot and all that. But now you're in America. You're going to go to the locker room now with strings, like a kite string hanging out of your sock. Yeah, you're going to laugh at you. They're not going to make fun of you over here. And therefore, you have to adapt. And the Torah has to adapt. So Esther wanted to know. She knew that they went to the party. That wasn't a secret. And she knew Mordechai was against it. But she wanted to know what was their motivation. Was it coming just because they wanted to see the palace? So they get some good ideas how to do the marble on their floor, and to get some ideas how to put the chandeliers. They came with their cameras, taking pictures of everything, put it on their on their Facebook page, eating spaghetti at the Ahasuerus' party, showing everybody all getting everybody jealous. Yeah, because taking selfies with Ahasuerus. If that's why they went, okay, so it was a lustful thing. But then she says like this: why was the Torah written in stone? Mizeh u'mizeh. Because if you write it on one side and you chisel it 2 inches deep, you can always erase it. But once you write it through and throughout, you can't erase the letter. It's through the stone. The letter is there permanently. The fact that the Torah is written mizeh u'mizeh shows the durability of the Torah, the endurance of the Torah, the permanency of the Torah. The Torah is given in a way mizeh u'mizeh. It wasn't given with invisible ink, that all of a sudden the words disappear a few years later. It was written mizeh u'mizeh. Finished. You can't erase something that's written mizeh u'mizeh. If I bore a hole through this table, finish the holes in the table, you can't get rid of it. So she came along and said, is that what motivated them to go to the party? Shema avru ala Torah. They think that the Torah changes with the times. Sha'avru on this hashkafa of mizeh u'mizehim ketuvim. If that's the reason why, then they're in trouble. Because that's already hashkafic already. Now already they're going to get punished, not because they went to the party, but the motivating item is a bigger sin. What motivated you to go to the party is you hold the Torah as it's flexible, you know, it has to adjust it with the times. They don't know that the mizeh u'mizeh ketuvim, so that she was afraid of that. So she said, mazeh ba'al mazeh, shema avru ala Torah, sheketuva, mizeh u'mizeh, that's written, mizeh u'mizeh ketuvim. And that's a very important hashkafa that a lot of people don't realize that. You know, they think there's a, forget about different locations, different times. Even in the same year, you know, many people have a winter Torah and a summer Torah. They have two different Torot. They just go, you know, 50 miles over the Verrazano Bridge, and over there they have a different Sefer Torah, a waterproof Sefer Torah, that has different rules. Guy says, in Brooklyn I don't eat out. In Brooklyn, you know, but in Deal, there's no kosher restaurants. You know. His own Torah, he creates his own Torah. Everybody has their own versions. And the Torah is written mizeh u'mizeh. It doesn't change. It doesn't change on one side of the Verrazano or the other. It doesn't matter if you're living on the West Coast or the East Coast. The Torah is the same Torah in every single location. You know, a guy might behave on winter vacation. He might do things that he might not do in Brooklyn.
you know, in between all the learning and the praying, he might do other things that are not appropriate. Because that's all everybody comes from into vacation. Rabbi, we had a daf yomi, and we had minyanim, and we learned, and we had kosher food. I said, I'm not interested. What did you do in between? I want to know. Daf yomi. I'm not. When I speak about that, I'm not speaking about the daf yomi. That's the good part of it. I want to know what you do after the daf. I don't remember. Fifth Amendment. Speak to my lawyer. So you see over here, the Torah is not such a Torah that it varies on location and place. And the Torah is imizeh umizeh. It's an eternal book. So if Sanser of Farlhurst says the Badim are not for transporting it, as we said, but the Badim are to explain to you the nature of the book. Because when you see Badim on something, automatically, what does it tell you? That this item is going to be transported. Otherwise, what do you put Badim for? If there was no Badim on it, then it indicates it's a permanent place in its place. The Badim are a message to the person that's looking at it. This Torah applies to every single location. Therefore, the Badim can never be put out because the Badim are talking to the person that's looking at it. That this Torah applies in Eretz Yisrael. And the fact that it has Badim, which implies transition, or that it's transitory, it applies in America, it applies in Europe, it applies all over the world, in every time zone. So you can never take the Badim out, because by taking the Badim out, you're as if saying, it applies here. And it's really not to be moved from here. Once you move it from here, could be it's a different book. The polls indicate that as this book travels through time and through space and through different eras, it's the same book. So the Badim are a hashkafic message. That hashkafic message you cannot take out. The Mizbeah doesn't give that message. There's no such thing as the eternity of the Mizbeah or the eternity of the Shulchan. The Torah, what is the laws? So the Mizeh or Mizeh Ketuvim is represented in the actual polls that are written, that are placed in the Taba'ot, which incidentally also placed Mizeh U'Mizeh, also placed through the holes. In any event, that would be another strong reason to talk about the permanency of the Torah. You know, some modern guys that will come along and say, yeah, you know, the Torah called the homosexuality an abomination. Yeah, in those days, you know, those days when society wasn't advanced like we are today. They didn't understand it. They weren't psychological. They didn't understand, you know, the depth of the of what it is. And therefore, you know, listen, you can't blame the Torah for forbidding it. Society understood certain way. But today, that we understand that it's, you know, it's not the guy's fault, that he's born that way, and it's hereditary, and all that other stuff. Therefore, you know, you have to say that what was abominable then, it's not abominable now. Now, all that might be true, that it's hereditary and you're born, all that stuff's fine. There's only one problem. You can't change the book. There's poles in this book. This book is to survive all its travelings. Not only the 42 travelings in the desert, but the 4 galuyot until Mashiach. Once you start to change the Torah, you're transgressing the isur of lo yasur mimenu. You're taking out the poles. By taking out the poles, basically, what are you saying? The Torah is here, and it stays here. In the year 2448. And we leave that Torah here, and we take a new Torah with us to the modern world. So anytime one comes to change the Torah, that's like taking the poles out. You're taking away the transitory nature of the Torah, that it goes through time, and it never has any... You know, it's never adapted or never revised, like we talked in Shabbat as well. So it's the same talk again. That's strong derash. Mizeh u'mizehim ketuvim. It's got to be written through and throughout. The Zohar HaKadosh says that the Torah, for it to go up, it's not enough to learn Torah. The Torah needs wings. Just like a bird who has wings, it causes it to fly. So the mitzvot that we do need wings in order to go up. So the Zohar HaKadosh says, Kol mitzvah she'eno bidhilu urhimu, let legatfaha. Any mitzvah that does not have dihilu urhimu, dihilu means jirat Hashem, and ahavat Hashem, let legatfaha does not have wings, and it cannot go up. For Torah to be accepted, to go up to Shamayim, to reach the Kisei Kavod, it's got to have those two ingredients. It's not enough performance. You need Yirat Hashem and Ahavat Hashem. Some say that that's the secret behind the shaking. You see the shakers in the Amidah? So the shakers, what do? They go forward, they go back. They go forward and they go back. The forward motion represents Ahavat Hashem. They want to get close to Hashem. The second they get close to Hashem, they go back, Yirat Hashem. Ahavat Hashem, Yirat Hashem, Ahavat Hashem, Yirat Hashem. So that's already, they're craving to get close to God. And once they get closer, oh my God, they're too close, move back. So we can explain their calisthenics in the Amidah is really more than just a knee-jerk reaction. There's a kavanah behind it. Anyway, so again, some of the Mefashim will explain that the two poles represent Ahavat Hashem and Yirat Hashem. And therefore it's teaching you that for this Torah that's in this box, for it to go up, you need the two poles. Ahavat Hashem, Yirat Hashem, on the two sides. Without the two poles of Ahavat and Yirat, it doesn't go up. That would be another interpretation. And yet, even a fifth interpretation, whatever number we're up to, is what the Mefarshim say, is that the poles clearly represent the supporters of the Torah. You know, Torah needs support. It needs physical support. Imen kemah en Torah. So, you know, if you're not going to have guys that are willing to fund it, so the Torah cannot exist. But the Torah is coming to teach you an unbelievable concept. That the supporters are connected to the Torah. They're not disconnected. The Hachamim say that Latid Lavo, when the rabbi who learned Torah goes up to Shammai, who sits next to him? The supporter. The supporter is able to buy his place in Olam Haba. And where do we learn that from? The poles do not get separated from the Torah itself. Lo Yasunu Memen. The poles stay next to the. Next to the Aron. Again, it's not the Aron itself; it's on the outside. But nonetheless, it's still connected. So therefore, that gives it a motivation to the supporters of Torah to Yasunu Memenu. That comes out according to this interpretation that if somebody comes along, and I'm collecting Achnasat Kala. Oh, Achnasat Kala, wonderful! I love Achnasat Kala. Another guy comes in, I'm collecting for the Kolel. That's not my item. I don't give to the Kolel. You're taking the poles out. What gives you a right to take the poles out of the Aron? You're removing support. You decided that this type of Torah you give, this type of Siddakah you give, and this type of Siddakah you don't give. If everybody would have that attitude, what would support the Torah? So therefore, that would be a Musar. I don't say no, but that shouldn't be an expense of Kolel guys. Although he has no problem to give $1 million to the university, that's no problem for that. For those Kolel guys that are binge drinking in the dorm, that's kedai to support. Beer is expensive these days, absolutely, especially in the kegs. But in yeshiva where they're sitting and learning Aramaic, I don't support that. Let them go to work. Anyway, so that's yet another interpretation of the. Of the Badim. One observation on the Badim. So in these stories are repeated, Rabotai, in Parashat Vayakir Pekudeh. You're aware of that? So anyway, in Parashat Vayakel, it talks about the actual building of the Mishkan. Here it talks about the instructions to do it. Vayakel says the actual execution. So in Vayakel it says, and Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk Dalid, Vayaas Badeh Ase Shitim. They made it, they did it. Vayasafo Tam Zahav, they played it in gold. Vayaveh Et Abadim Batabaot. And they placed it in the rings. That's it. They placed it, so it's in already. Correct? They placed it in. It's in position. So you can never take it out again, correct? So that's it. This is the moment. This is the moment of truth. Parashat Vayakel, the second the Pasuk says, Vayaveh et abadim batabaot. In parentheses, le'olam. Because you can't take it out. Once you put it in, you can't take it out, no matter what. Is that correct? Open up Parashat Pekudeh, Parashat right after that. And the Pasuk says, Vayikach vayiten et ha'edut el ha'aron. Moshe Rabbeinu took the luchot and he put it in the Aaron. Vayasim et ha'badim al ha'aron. And he put the badim on the Aaron. What do you mean to the badim on the Aaron? Already the badim on the Aaron in Parashat Vayikach. That means somebody moved the badim? What do you mean? The badim were there already. The Pasuk says, why could the Pasuk say, Vayasim et ha'badim al ha'aron? Vayasim, it was done already. And somebody took him out? You're not allowed to take him out, I thought. This is a discrepancy. You see, we created a discrepancy between these two Pesukim over here. Listen, if you go with the Derech of the Tosafot has a different mahalach over here. Tosafot is in Yoma Ayin Bet. So there's a Tosafot that says Ketiv B'Tabaot Aaron. So he has a whole piece over here. He says a big chiddush. He comes out and says that on the Aaron there was four poles. Wow. Two poles that were there for carrying it. And those he says you can get rid of. And then two poles that were there permanently. Oh, so that's already a different... In the Mishkan book, you have to draw a different Aaron according to the Tosafot. Four poles. So therefore, we have no problem. You know, the fact that they took out the poles, because you were allowed to take out two of the poles according to Tosafot. So we have no steed out from Vayakel to Pekudeh. Vayakel, they put in the poles, and the fact that it says they put in the other poles, because there was four poles. They put the first two in, they put the second two in. According to Tosafot, you have no steed out. But according to the conventional way of understanding, how do we explain that? So I saw a beautiful interpretation of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha. He says an amazing point. He says, if you look at all the furnishings of the Mishkan, you'll notice that there's a difference between the Aron and everything else. For example, by the Shulchan, the Pasuk says that they took the Shulchan and they placed it in its position. And then they put the bread on it. They took the menorah, they put it in its position, and then they lit it. The mizbeah, they put it in its position, and they brought the ketoret on it. Every furniture is like that. They put it in place, and then they used it. The aron, it's the opposite, it says. They put the luchot in the aron, and then they put it in place. You hear the difference? In all the other furnishings, they put it in place, then they did the mitzvah. By the Aron, they put the luchot, the Sefer Torah in the Aron, and then after that, they close them, and only after they put it in the place where it belonged, which is in the Kodesh Kodashim. So he says an amazing insight on what the difference between the Aron is and the other Kelim. He says, what makes a Shulchan a Shulchan? You built it. Once you build a Shulchan, it's called a Shulchan. Finished. It's a Shulchan. Now, there's a mitzvah on the Shulchan. What's the mitzvah? Lechem panim. No problem. But it's separate from the Shulchan. You built the Shulchan, now you have to put the Lechem panim on it. So they built the Shulchan, they put it in the place. Now put Lechem panim on it. What's the mitzvah? The purpose of mizbeah is what? When is a mizbeah a mizbeah? Once you built it, it's called a mizbeah. Now, how do you do the mitzvah and the mizbeah? Bring a korban, separate. The menorah. When is a menorah called a menorah? You built it, it's called a menorah. Mezeh ma'aseh menorah, finish. Now, how do you do the mitzvah of the menorah? You light it. However, said Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, an Aron is not called an Aron until you put the Luchot in. It's not the pshat, you built a box, so now it's an Aron. And now we want to do a separate thing. Put the Luchot in there. Nah. The Aron and the Luchot, it's one item. You can't separate the Aron from the Luchot. What's an Aron without the Luchot? A menorah is a menorah even if you didn't light it. A Shulchan is a Shulchan without the Lechem HaPanim. But you cannot build an Aron without Luchot inside of it. It doesn't have a din of Aron. It's like having a human being without Neshama. It's not called a human yet. It's not alive. Which means that the Luchot is not a prat in the Aron. It is Gufa, the Aron. It's not like we built the Aron. Very nice. You know what? We have Aron. We'll do a mitzvah with it. Put the Luchot in there. No, it's not like that. That's the menorah, lighting the menorah. The etzim construction of the Aron has to have the Luchot inside of it. Otherwise, it's not called an Aron in the first place. Understand the yeson that he's saying? Mm-hmm. Very, very important item.
Why is that? By the order of that?
That's the mitziyut. Because Aron without Torah is nothing. What is Aron without the Torah? It's a box. Meaning it's intrinsic to the Aron itself, the Torah itself. That's what you see. Why is it like that? You can philosophize. But you see it from the text, it's like that. You cannot put the Aron. Why don't they put the Aron in the Kodesh Kodashim and then throw in the book? No, because it's not an Aron yet. What are you throwing in? You have to put a menorah in the place. You have to put a Shulchan in the place. You have to put a Mizbeah in the place. Putting an empty box in the Aron, in the Kodesh, and throwing in the Torah, it's not an Aron. You need to build the Aron first. How do you build an Aron? You build it with acacia wood, you plate it, and you put a Torah in it. Now it's called an Aron. Now go place it in the Kodesh Kodashim. It's not a separate part of the Aron. It is Gufa, the Aron, the Torah itself. That's what makes the Aron. By the way, he brings a proof. In the second Beit HaMikdash, there was no Aron, by the way. No. You didn't know that? There was no Aron in the second Beit HaMikdash. Huh? Why was there no Aron? They hid it. Because there was no Luchot. They didn't have the Luchot. They hid the Luchot. So I asked the rabbi, what's the difference? So build a box without the Luchot. We don't have the Luchot. So therefore we can have an Aron?
It's a box.
Elabshan is without the Luchot, it's not an Aron. We put a dummy in there, put a mannequin in there. You can't stop put another piece of furniture that doesn't belong. Either put an Aron, or put anything. Once the Luchot were missing, you can't put an empty box in there. But it's an Aron without the Luchot. No, it's not called an Aron without the Luchot. Understand the Yesod that he's saying over here? It's a very, very strong Yesod.
But no Aron in it.
That's right. More space. More, even more legroom.
So you have over here, you have over here amazing yesod, he says. With this, he answers the question. He answers the question between Parashat Vayakel and Parashat Pekudeh. He answers it gorgeous. In Parashat Pekudeh, what is the Parashat Vayakel? What does the pasuk say? Vayas badeh asir shittim. He made the badim. Vayitzaf otam zahav, and he plated them. Vayaveh et habadim b'tabaot, and he put them in the tabaot. Asalot Aaron, laset et Aaron. They put them in. I go to Parashat Pekudeh. What does it say? Vayikach vayiten et ha'edut el Aaron. They didn't put the edut into the Aaron until Parashat Pekudeh. Vayasem et habadim. That means in Parashat Vayikach, before they put the luchot in, you can take out the poles. It's not an Aaron. It's a box. There's no isur to take out the Aaron, the poles, until it's an Aaron. So in Parashat Vayikach, they didn't put the edut in. So they were testing it out. They stuck it in. They pulled it out. Man, that works. But in Parashat Pekudeh, the Torah says, "Vayikach vayiter et ha'edut el Aaron." Finish. Once it says, it doesn't say that in Vayakel. Once it says in Pekudeh, "Vayikach vayiter et ha'edut el Aaron," vayasim et habadim. Finish. You can't move it. So that's another ra'aya. You see, without the Torah. Without the Torah, it's not, that whole furnishing loses its identity. The identity of the Aaron is not merely a box to hold the Torah. That is the purpose of the Aaron, to have the Torah inside. Without that, it has little value. So there's no deen that you can't take out the poles from an empty box. No issue on that. Torah says you can't take it out from the filled box. So therefore, in Pekudeh, when they put the Edut in, and that could explain Rashi in our Parasha. Rashi in our Parasha says, Torah starts with the Aron. That's always the first thing. That's the most important. V'asu Aron. V'sipita ota zahav, yasakta lo, v'betat abadim v'tabaot, asod Aron. That says, v'natata el Aron, place in the Aron, et ha'edut, the edut, the law, asher omar elecha. That she says, what is the Edut? The Torah. Okay, so that clearly. So you ready? It says, then it says what? Vasita kaporet. What's a kaporet? Kaporet is the lid on top of the Aron. It's a box, but it's open on top. So you need to put a piece of wood to seal it on top. That's called the kaporet. Tells you how to make the kaporet. And on top of the kapori, you put the cherubs, the kirubim. That tells you all about the kirubim. And then it says, "Venatata the kaporet ala aron mil ma'ala." Take the kaporet and put it on the aron mil ma'ala. Ve'el aron t'ten et ha'edut. And in the aron, put the edut. Put the book. Before you put the top on, figure that out. But the point is. Again, the Torah tells us that you have to put the book in the Aron. So that she right away says, what are you talking about over here? That she jumps and says, Lo yadati lama nikhval. Why is this written twice? Share kibad nimar venatata ila Aron et ha'edut. We went a second ago. When you're making the Aron, it says, place the Edut into the Aron. And here it says again, place the Aron in the Edut. Lama nikhval. Yishkomar. Sheba lilamed. Shebeodo Aron lebado belo kaporet, that when it's just a box without the kaporet, yiten tehilah ha'edut letocho ve'arkach yiten et kaporet alav. She goes out of his way to say that before you cover the box, make sure that you put the book in. What is she telling you? That she's telling you this yesod.
If you're just going to put the cover on the bag, you don't have an aron yet. The final makibah patish of aron is what? When you put the cover on. So the pasuk has to come along and say, hold it. Before you put the cover on, make sure you fill the box up. What's the, why? What's the, let me put the cover on and then I'll put the, after I put it in. Because you're wasting your time. You don't have a shem aron unless you put the luchot in front. The order is essential. An empty box has zero value. Where is a menorah that's not lit? Let's still call the menorah. But aron without luchot and the sefer Torah in it is not called an aron. That teaches us the aron status is a different status. What does that mean to us? What does it mean to us? So if the analogy is they tell us that the Aron itself was in half measures. 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5. All the other things, they had full measures. Why is this only by halves? So it's coming to tell you, Tamid Chacham that studies Torah, he has to have half measures. He shouldn't have ga'ava. He shouldn't be a whole. Half, modest, humble. It says, the boxes that they had, they were plated from the inside and the outside. Mibayit u'mihutz. From here they learn the lesson that a Tamid Chacham that studies Torah, tocho kevaro, that he cannot just study Torah, on the outside, but it has to be also internalize it. Some people that learn Torah because he's in yeshiva, they learn this. They put him in front of a book, they give him a check every month, he sits and learns. But it's not part of him. So it says tocho kevaro. My point is that when they talk about the Aron, right away they jump to a Tamid Chacham, a guy who's learning has to be like the Aron. Which means like this. The human being is the box. The Torah that we learn is what we put in the box. If the rabbi's analogy is right, it's not that you could be a Jew and you also have Torah. Nice. You're not a person without Torah. You don't have a shem unless you're... It's not that... I'm a Jewish guy, but I don't learn. So you're not a bar, you're not able, are you then already? It's a humrah, which means it's possible a guy can be a Jew, but he's not careful so much on a certain mitzvah. That doesn't take away from his mahut. But a Jew's not learning Torah, doesn't have Torah, that's already affects his mahut itself, be'etzim. It's not a separate entity, the Torah. It's a guy saying, I'm a person, I just don't have a brain and a heart. What are you, the tin man? What is this over here? You have a brain and a heart. How could that be? You cannot be a human being without these things. It's not a person could say, listen, I'm a human being, but the guy's bald. Okay, we know many bald people. Shem alem yahyu. That doesn't take away from their humanness. This guy doesn't have hair. That's not ma'akev. There's certain things that are not ma'akev, the guy. But the guy cannot say he's a without Torah is it goes together with the Aron. And you see that the Gemara was always making an analogy between Tamid Chacham and Aron. Tamid Chacham and Aron. So this analogy has to go across the board. So it's not the pshat that you're just lacking a mitzvah by not learning. You're lacking your identity. The identity of the person is this is missing if he doesn't have Torah. It's a different understanding about the integral relationship that we have with the Torah. A human being cannot, a Jew at least, cannot be a Jew without. And there's no option without Torah. And in the olden days, it was known every Jew was a man of the book. In the modern generations, they left the Torah and they went to other empty wells that cannot hold the water. But Baruch Hashem, guys in the yeshiva, guys in the synagogue that know this, they have to mechazek that. Mm. And the more our connection is with the Torah, lo yasuru mimenu, you cannot remove it. There has to be a permanence in this. Just like they never took out the book. So once they put the book in, it stayed in there also. So that's the, you know, from a parasha that has no story.
That's what you.
You know, for a parasha that has no narrative. Look at that, just from one piece of furniture. Look how many lessons we're able to learn from the Badim. But don't forget the Be'er Yosef, because that's the beauty. When you see the Badim, you're reminded, this book moves. It's a traveling book. The travels began at Har Sinai, in the second year when they built the Mishkan, when they got the Torah, and it keeps on traveling with us, and it didn't change. It's Mizeh U'Mizeh Em Ketuvim. Baruch Adonai L'Olam.